This is the Agile New York City podcast. We present industry experts and connect local practitioners. For more information, please visit us at www.agilenyc.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Agile New York City podcast. My name is Joe Krebs, the host of this podcast. And today I'm here with Alan Godestino, who is also the presenter of our Agile User Group meeting here, October 2011, here in New York City at Pace University. Welcome to the podcast, Alan.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here on the greatest planet on Earth. The greatest city on Earth.
The greatest city. The greatest apple. The big apple. Well, thanks for coming to New York. You are out of Boston, right?
Yes, located in the Boston area. Yeah. Yes.
And Alan, you run a company called the EGB Consulting.
EBG, yeah.
EBG Consulting, right. That's your company.
Right.
And you're very specialized on requirements work, facilitated workshops, these sorts of things. We're going to explore all these things in a little bit on this podcast. But you're also the author of two books, Requirements by Collaboration, and Software Requirements Memory Jogger. I do need to know a little bit more about these two books, and I do need to know a little bit more about what your talk is going to be. So this podcast is being recorded a few minutes before your talk, so whenever you are listening to this podcast, the talk is over.
Right.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about tonight? Your topic for tonight is...
The title of the talk is Power Up Your Agile Planning and Analysis.
Uh-huh.
And How to Deliver Value Using Structured Conversations.
Right.
Kind of a long name, but
well, that's okay.
It's really about pulling together the key elements for mm-hmm. successfully planning and replanning and figuring out in a collaborative way how to pick the right requirements to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be talking about the partnership, basically three elements: partnership, planning, and preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And how the partners, who are business, technology, and customers, together continually mm-hmm. collaborate around requirements. And what they're doing is they're working on discovering, preparation, and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a cycle that's continual, and planning underscores all of that.
Right.
And one of the things that we've observed in our practice is that a lot of folks get down some of the mechanics of the Agile practice,
mm-hmm.
but they struggle when it comes to how do we pick which requirements to deliver, because, I mean, that's really what each delivery cycle is,
yeah.
is delivering a set of requirements that then need to be validated, and then you start the planning and preparation all over
right.
again. So what we found is that when these stakeholders come together, these three partner communities, again, the technical, the business, and the customer,
right.
when they come together, what we want to do is have them look, explore, and evaluate holistically around requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example. One of the poor cousins in the requirements world are what people generally refer to as non-functional requirements.
Right.
And that's a big bucket.
Yeah.
And to be very specific, non-functional requirements are design and implementation constraints, you
mm-hmm.
know, like you're going to build it on a particular platform, browser, mm-hmm. footprint mm-hmm. limitations,
performance,
and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually quality attributes, which
okay.
is the second one of the non-functionals. That's the one most people think about.
Yeah.
So those are things
like... Well, it's the
like,
first thing which jumps to your mind,
it
was, right?
It is, yeah. absolutely, yeah. because those are, you know, constraints actually around functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second one, and the third are interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is what we want to do is
you
have...
graphical user interface.
It could be system-to-system interfaces.
Okay.
It could be user interfaces, which it could be GUIs,
okay.
KUIs,
yes.
MUIs.
Human interface, human-computer interface.
Of some
yeah,
sort,
yeah.
which also could
yeah.
be reports that,
okay.
that you need to deliver, whether they're ad hoc or standard reports.
Mm-hmm.
They could be, if you're building a system, which has hardware and software, that's messages.
Yeah.
So any kind of interface the product has to have.
Yeah.
So those non-functionals, again, are design and implementation constraints, quality attributes, mm-hmm. and interfaces. Mm-hmm. Now, what often gets happened, we find on Agile teams, is they forget till later to incorporate looking at those dimensions mm-hmm. when they're exploring what they're going to build next. Mm-hmm. So what we've found is that there's essentially seven dimensions, and those are three of them. Mm-hmm. And in the middle, sort of those non-functionals surround them, and in the middle are the yeah. functional, which most people are using user stories
yeah.
to look at. Okay, and functional requirements are not just the user role and the action, which is what the stories do a good job with, but there's data, mm-hmm. and there's policies or rules. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do, and what we found to be really powerful and efficient, is we use this pattern of explore and evaluate. Explore and evaluate is like expand and contract, something yeah. I talked about in my workshops mm-hmm. Book. And we quickly do that across all seven dimensions, and then we pull those options. We look at options mm-hmm. across those seven dimensions. We pull them together, and we've got a really efficient slicing mechanism when we slice for value.
Okay.
So it all comes back to that value,
okay.
right? So the partners have to collaborate around figuring out the vision mm-hmm. and the value.
Mm-hmm.
And use the value in this explore and evaluate of the product needs. And then we're planning, and as you know, because yeah. you wrote beautifully about the value and importance of planning in Agile, mm-hmm. we're constantly replanning.
Yeah.
So we can return to the same seven dimensions, and we visualize it, as you'll see tonight, we'll visualize it as a canvas
mm-hmm.
and we use icons to remember yeah. those seven dimensions.
I actually saw that on your website on ebgconsulting.com,
right? Right, ebgconsulting.com.
Yeah, there are some artifacts where you actually showcase some pictures of your workshop. I highly recommend everybody to look at those because it's highly visual, which I think is very interesting, because the word structured conversation for some, you know, might be something like structure. What I said is probably the opposite of this podcast right now, is there's a structure to it, right? How you guide and orchestrate your planning meetings, your ceremonies, and all these things.
Yeah.
And then I saw those visual artifacts, and I was like, wow, this is really amazing. So what is a structured conversation?
Well, thank you for asking that question, yeah. right? It's really a metaphor for being able to have rich, transparent conversations.
Yeah.
And using those icons for the seven dimensions really helps. People, I mean, mm-hmm. we were just doing a workshop with a client last week, and a topic came up around one of the requirements, and somebody pointed to the wall to the quality attribute icon that was being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a repeatable, rememberable thing, and we're almost sort of brainwashing people to the icons will remember, oh yeah, we got to remember to talk about the data, right? What are the
yeah.
options for the data, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So the structured conversation can be really super lightweight, like mm-hmm. Two people or a small group standing at a wall or with a whiteboard, hopefully not drawing on the wall, but using a whiteboard or a flip chart paper,
yeah.
Or pieces of paper on a table, or it may be more formal, as in facilitated workshop, which I wrote about in my
mm-hmm.
first book. And so we have this gradient of formality for the conversation, but it entails this explore and evaluate, and entails having a clear understanding of the value criteria,
yeah.
Making sure the right partners are there, looking at the planning horizons, which we think of planning as the now view,
mm.
the preview, and the big view. Right?
Oh,
those are the now view, the preview, and the big view. The now view being the iteration, or if
yeah.
you're using a flow model in Kanban, it's a release. The preview being the release, and the big view being the roadmap.
Yeah.
And so these constructs all come together for this structured conversation, and everybody's in the game, and
mm-hmm.
it's fast and very efficient.
Requirements work, traditional or agile. I mean, there has to be some form of requirements work has to be done.
It's the right. It's what we're
right.
delivering
okay.
is the requirements.
I just want to clarify. So there's traditional, there's agile, but requirements is kind of a neutral thing. It has to be done. There's some good techniques, there's some not so good techniques. But we still struggle. I mean, I remember requirements were an issue in the 1990s.
Yeah.
And it still seems to be an issue
yeah.
in 2011. So why do you think that is? Why does this problem seemed not to stop.
Because, well, there's a couple reasons, I think.
It's good for you.
It is, but in terms of the work, but I love this work because it's such a balance between what's possible, but also what needs to be made very specific and unambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So we're iterating between those worlds of discovery and possibility and certainty and clarity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Requirements, part of the reason I think why it's always going to be, and it's not going to change, it's always going to be a challenge, is because it's the requirements is about all stakeholder needs coming together. And everybody has different perceptions of value.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody might, unfortunately, have a different understanding of the vision of what the product actually is.
Yeah.
So when you have diverse stakeholders from those different communities, business people, customers, and you know, end users, buyers,
mm-hmm.
choosers and users and influencers,
mm-hmm.
and the actual technology people who build or supply it, everybody's, you know, got a different angle
mm-hmm.
on what the requirements are, and you have this balancing act. So that's part of it, and also because they are going to change, and in fact, they should change. I mean, that's one of the beauties of using agile practices,
yeah.
is that you don't really know what you need until you start to build it, deliver it, and work with it. And so you're validating the needs.
Yeah.
So it's deliver and validate, and then go back through that cycle of discover, prepare, and deliver.
Do you think it's also with a human?
Absolutely.
Like
absolutely. That's the first piece that all
piece.
Stakeholders are...
Have to communicate
right.
with each other. And
right.
So hacking order.
Right.
Who wants
it can
what.
Be.
Yeah.
It can be. And it makes me cringe when people talk about, use this term, requirements gathering.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tim Lister had an image years ago of, you know, a little girl with a basket of flowers, like gathering the requirements. Doesn't quite happen that way. The proper term is elicit.
Elicit, yeah.
Elicit. Some people might say solicit, but elicit the requirements. So it's a collaborative effort, and we use different tools and techniques
mm-hmm.
to do that. So there's a lot of creative work and what people would call, you know, the communication or soft work, which is
right.
part of what's difficult, right?
Yes.
I mean, Frederick Book said it's the yeah. soft stuff that's the hard stuff, to
yeah.
very roughly paraphrase.
Yeah.
So I think we'll always struggle.
This, with your work, you are very much in the soft spot with your requirements work, and you also do retrospective, which is also soft.
It is, but it's also hard, right?
It's
hard to look
yeah.
at that stuff.
Soft skills.
Yeah. Yes. It's hard to look at that stuff, and it's also a challenge to be... and remain in a neutral place to
mm-hmm.
serve the project and product community.
Mm-hmm.
That's essential.
Yeah.
That's essential, that neutrality.
Yeah. What I really like about you, actually, you pointed that out already numerous times during this podcast, the word needs.
Mm-hmm.
So many people know what they want, what they like to have, but it's so hard to find out what you need.
Right.
So it's a key focus on your requirements work is the needs, right?
Absolutely.
What's like a quick takeaway for somebody out there? A lot of people tell me what they want, but I don't know what they really need. What's your quick answer to?
Well, I think it
to
comes
get to the needs.
To get to needs, I think it comes to value, because you mm-hmm. can't have everything. You just can't have everything,
mm-hmm.
and we know that there's a limit in time
mm-hmm.
and money and the level of quality that is possible that for your product. So. There's many techniques for doing elicitation, but to figure out want versus need, having an agreed upon set of value criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one of the things that, when working with a group, for example, I will try to seed this by doing some work ahead of time. But I'll ask people to pull together, maybe with a master list of potential value criteria, and in small groups come up with, for this product, what
mm-hmm.
we know about the vision and the stakeholder, we'll have done some of that higher level analysis,
mm-hmm.
what are the in priority value criteria that we have?
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll pull that together, and we'll have cross-functional groups with those three communities doing
yeah.
that, pull it together, we'll look on the wall at what this is, and then turn to the product champion and say, okay, educate us, what actually are the value criteria? Mm-hmm. Now, what's really interesting, doing this recently with one group, is that it keeps popping up that value is contextual.
Mm-hmm.
It can change.
Mm-hmm.
It can change with time, it can change with market conditions and so forth. So with one group, for example, the product champion, his name was Josh, came back and said, okay, here's my value criteria after hearing the key stakeholders' mm-hmm. input. And he came up with his top seven. And he split it down to say, okay, the next iteration's value criteria, and then here's mm-hmm. the next releases.
Oh, interesting.
So it adjusted. Mm-hmm. And he did that on his own without without discussion. But it just keeps coming back to that. Last week, working with a group, the value criteria was not well understood by the technology people.
Mm-hmm.
And having the voice of the business, who also had the voice of the customer from a prior demo in mind, articulate really what they needed to do with the product, really mm-hmm. got everybody on the same page.
Awesome.
So that helps with big time, with that want versus need.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. I saw on your website that you do a lot of traveling, you speak a lot of conferences, you share your experiences there. You also have a connection of some sort with IIBA.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
So I'm not too much associated with that organization, but I do hear a lot of things in the agile world right now with the upcoming things at the, let's say, PMI opening up to agile
right.
practices. Is that a topic on IIBA as well?
Well,
agile?
I've been working on that for a couple of years. So the IIBA, for listeners that aren't familiar, stands for the International Institute of Business Analysis.
Right.
And I guess you could kind of think of it as a little sister to the PMI.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the level of membership that PMI does because it hasn't been around as long. I think it's been around maybe 7 years.
Mm.
But it is an international community, and chapters are popping up all over the planet.
Yeah.
I've spoken in a number of the chapters, and there's a body of knowledge, just like there is with the PM community,
mm-hmm.
That's gone through several releases. Mary Gorman, who's with us at EBG Consulting, was instrumental in that 2.0 version. That's the current version.
Okay.
And my the jogger that I wrote, the glossary from that, is the basis for the jogger. We donated that to the body of knowledge. Now, the body of knowledge, as you read it now, alas, reads very waterfallish.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've been doing, I've been working with a group of volunteers building an extension, an agile extension to the body of knowledge,
mm-hmm.
the BA body of knowledge. So we actually had a weekend workshop back in August at the Agile conference.
Okay.
And some of us that are passionate about this topic got together and did a work session. We had done some work ahead of time, but you know how it is, like with distributed agile teams.
Yeah.
Now add on top of that we're all volunteers, right? And oh my goodness, to get deliverables is really difficult. So same time, same place. And
mm-hmm.
and I got to say, one of the things I really pushed for was that we needed a neutral facilitator throughout that weekend.
Great.
So we did. We actually got a certified professional facilitator through the International Association of Facilitators. And we came up with a pretty decent draft, though.
Okay.
So this is an agile extension to the mm-hmm. body of knowledge that's coming out.
Okay.
And in the stuff that I've been, you know, when I do conferences and speaking and articles, I really try to pass the word to the analysis community, because there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt, and what's my role? And
that's right.
Am I
in the team? Am I outside of the team?
Am I in the team? Am I outside of the team?
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is, whether there's a role or not called business an analyst,
mm-hmm.
the fact is, it's about the goal, not the role.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you have a role or not, analysis has to happen on an agile team.
Right.
And I mean, I recently worked with a team, and it was a lead architect who played that role, because they had no analyst per se on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've seen this, Joe, where you know, you don't have to have a formal analyst. Now, analysts should have, and often do have, a lot of really great skills that are necessary to do this requirements exploration and help with the planning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, planning is really just allocation of requirements.
Yeah. I mean, there is, I do agree, this is sometimes people don't even know that they are doing analysis. I've seen teams, they were surprised when I said, this is analysis, what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is? Yeah, it is.
And what do they think it is?
Well, there was meetings and all these things, but yeah. It is analysis.
Yeah.
But it could be optimized to be better analysis and to be more, in certain ways, more abstract. And so it's an interesting field. Do you feel like with the IIBA, the PM, the Agile movement and all these things, that we are... that there's a danger of being again into, like in waterfall, it's like in a phased, that we are like thinking in phases. Here's the business analysis, here's the ceremony of project management, here is the architect, here is the developer, here's the QA. What do you think?
No, not as long as you know that they're really understanding, that all these communities are really understanding what the goal is, you know. And those are just groups that are going to focus on those disciplines. I'd like us to think about business analysis and requirements analysis as a discipline, just like project management, which really in Agile is more team facilitation, is a discipline, just like engineering, you know, design is a discipline. So, I mean, I really think that what's going to happen eventually is we're going to stop making a big deal about the A word, the Agile word.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, well, of course, this is how, for the most part, for most products, based on the characteristics of most products and the pace of business, that this is how you would build anyway. I mean, why would you build any other way, right?
Yeah.
Walker Royce, who wrote the paper that was interpreted as being waterfall, never intended it to be implemented the way we've been implementing it. So people won't be talking about the hype word of Agile, I don't think. It'll be sort of like back with OO, object orientation. That was the big thing, and everybody was saying, oh. And now it's like, well, that's how we do that's how we do design. Right. I mean, we don't have to...
OO is the standard these days.
Right.
How do you, like, working software over comprehensive documentation is one of the statements in the Agile Manifesto. When you see this particular statement and you see your BA work and you're coaching BA teams or BAs within a team, how do you sell agility or agile business analysis to executives? There shouldn't be any documentation, right?
Well, that of course is a myth, as you well know, being very experienced working with agile team. That's a crock, right?
Yeah.
Of course you need documentation, but it should be valued documentation. And unfortunately, there's an association, I think, with business analysts, the role, with documentation. And there's an association that analysts just sort of take notes and build documents. And that's a very unfortunate thing, because very skilled analysts do analysis and they help get to the heart of what is valuable at that point in time, actually, whether they're using waterfall or agile practices. First of all, with the working software over documentation, I mean, to me, there's a little bit of a conundrum for me by talking about working software. I mean, it's the value, because sometimes what we need to deliver is a combination of business process change as well as software with the product. And that's one of the values of business analysis. We're going back and we're not just jumping to a software solution, because software is not always the solution. It may be part of the solution.
You're right, yeah.
So that's the left side, right? And the right side with documentation, that's a really simple thing, because for me, because I want to think about, if I'm on a team, I want to think about who is the consumer of that documentation. And the consumer has value. Now, if I'm on the team, we're co-located, we're building and testing it ourselves, I'm not doing handovers, the evil handovers, I don't need to have like this monster specification, right? I might be able to have a mock-up of, or a portion of a context diagram and a data model, maybe some stories, examples, and prototypes. And that's good enough, because it's work in progress that I need the documentation for. Now, if I need to be able to do some handovers, if I have to do handovers because we have external teams that we're collaborating with, then the value of the documentation goes up a little bit, and what we need to do is find out what do they really need. Because if you look at some of those standard templates out there, if you were to take a template of a requirements document and take it and put all the pieces, 50 pages up on the wall, and ask the consumers of it. This is a thing I tell people to do. Ask the consumers to take a marker and circle the portions of that document that they really look at when they're building and testing the product.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry. Oh, my goodness. As you can see, there's not enough red or, you know, there's not
waste
enough
of paper.
A lot of waste.
Yeah, a lot of waste.
So we want to figure out, well, is this really what you need? What's the minimal that you really need for that handover?
Yeah.
But then there's also product documentation. Okay, so let's say you're building a commercial product and you're having user help or something that's used to sell the product, or you have audits, regulatory requirements that you have to satisfy, then that is valuable stuff. So that's more valuable. And once again, we need to know what those consume and necessary.
Yeah.
It's part of going to be part of your acceptance criteria for an iteration release or for the product at any planning cycle.
Think about FDA regulation.
Absolutely.
So valuable.
Very valuable and necessary. Yeah. You know, you could put the business at risk once you had it.
Yeah.
But once again, you don't need as much as you think you need. So part of the art is... when it comes to the documentation, this will depend on the product. The basic two patterns are when you have issues like regulatory issues or audit issues, is when do you build the documentation?
Mm-hmm.
Do you build it with the small bits of requirements, let's say you're using user stories, and does it get built as you go, or do you wait for, you know, a final release or an iteration prior to release, like a hardening iteration or something like that? And the answer to that, and I've done this weighing. I actually did this exercise of weighing this with an organization that does medical devices experimental. Okay, and a well-known healthcare organization that creates new innovative products, and they're not yet in that bucket where they're being regulated, medical devices, but they may be. So they may outsource and sell some of their products to companies that will build them. So the question is, when you're still in that innovative stage and you don't know a lot of stuff, there's a lot of volatility in what you're building. So there's going to be waste if you build the documentation as you go, right? But if you know fairly, if there's more stability to the requirements, then building that regulatory audit documentation incrementally right at the time that you know it the best, so there's not human knowledge waste, is a really smart thing to do.
Yeah.
And of course you want to vet that.
And you don't have to go back, like context switching.
Exactly.
You have to go back in months and say,
What did we try to do here?
So,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's beautifully said. And then as you build it in those little bits and have your short delivery cycles, you vet it. You make sure, okay, is this going to pass the mustard? and then you adjust, right?
Yeah.
Instead of building it all later and finding out, oh, you have to rework it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just practical.
Interesting, and I'm so excited now that we have a few more minutes, and I do want to give you a break before you actually go on stage for Agile New York City, because you have only a few minutes. So thank you for taking the time to actually speak a little bit up front before you go and present to the Agile New York City User Group. The topic will be Power Up Your Agile Planning and Analysis, Deliver Value via Structured Conversation. Thank you, Alan Gottesdiener.
Yep.
You do have a news that I want to highlight here at the end, where people can subscribe to on your website, right?
I do.
You shared some tips and tricks and techniques and experiences.
Yep.
For free.
You can go to, right, it's a free newsletter. We only send out, we're not going to spam you, you know, seven or eight times a year. You'll see the link on our homepage. And if we have announcements, like where I'm doing a webinar, free webinars, you'll get notified. And the book that Mary Gorman and I were working on, a book on the topic that I'll be talking about, you'll have announcements and, you know, pre-reads of that when you sign up for our e-newsletter.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm looking
Thanks,
forward to
Joe.
The presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.